BEFCO, but I tell you what, you know, they got a new jingle going, or they're trying to get a new jingle, and I've got one. I wrote one real fast. So with the help of my board operator, Trey, we're going to give you an example. And Sefco, you better listen up, because this is the winner. You ready, Trey? In a rush and gotta go? Other places are just too slow? Get your smokes with a cup of Joe and so much more at My Sefco. Yeah. There you go, Sefco. That's the winning jingle. Anyway, get your smokes, newspaper, sodas. They got a special going on. Monsters, $3 for $5. Check it out. Give me a call if you just like totally barfed at that. 697-6633. We got lots going on here. Let's see. We're simulcasting at KMIL 105.1 FM, The Ranch, right here, right now. And also out of Rockdale at KRXT 98.5 FM. So all you Rockdale-onians, give me a call. You can give me a call here at the studio at 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com. Check it out. Look at all the pages. Listen to us live there. Should be broadcasting live there on the radio page. If not, go to the dial on your radio or pull it up on your phone and listen live on the phone. Okay, what else do we got going on? Let me give you some show highlights. Once again, three true stories of self-defense from the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column. It's going to be this current issue, so if you got it, pull it out, open it up, and read along with me. Learn from others what to do and what not to do in situations of self-defense. Today's License to Carry Attorney segment, sponsored by Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, will be attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson discussing the LTC carrier and divorce and other potential legalities of 3D printing of guns. So we're going to have a little mesh of a segment today.
I actually saw in the news that they had that big case about the guy who...
I got the article right here, Trey.
Yeah, they upheld him, didn't they?
They got permission to do it, and there it is. No big deal, but we're going to discuss it.
Well, it's a huge deal in the long run because...
Well, it's a huge deal in one respect, but not in the sense of you've got to worry about being threatened by these things.
No.
It takes too much to do it. All right, let me get back to my notes here before I run out of time. This week's tactical snacking segment with the delicious Janae Goodman will be summer cold remedies. Who wants a cold in the summertime? Not me or you, so listen up.
Well, at least you try to get out of work or something. You know? Yeah.
At 11 o'clock, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the Duke of Decency, the pontificator of practicality, the connoisseur of common sense, and all-around good guy. Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement.
I got a new one on that.
What's that?
The main man of manners.
The main man of manners. We're going to have to put a jingle with that one, too. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms, is the AR-15 in 7.62x39. That's not 308, by the way. Clarifying. That's the AK-47 round that everybody's familiar with. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. You'll see a quick video of me holding it there and what it looks like. There's so many different variations of it, but I'm primarily talking about the 7.62x39 characteristics of it. My special guest today is Rick Momi, friend of Ross Watson. He's a 20-year vet of U.S. Spec Ops and a 3-year vet of the French Foreign Legion, which I thought was pretty awesome. This guy has stories to tell, and I'm going to ask him to tell us. It's going to be very interesting, so pay attention to that. That'll be right about 11:25, 11:30. And finally, Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, will be in here to beat me up and demonstrate how to defend yourself while using me.
Which is everybody's favorite portion of the... It's smart of you to put it at the very end of the show.
What do they say? You always hurt the ones you love? Yeah, okay. All right. So with that, let's start with our true stories. And once again, we're going to ad-lib it today. I was enjoying it the last couple of weeks with Trey, so we're going to do it again this week. And this is from the current issue, the August issue of the American Rifleman. Page 10, story number one, reads as follows. And the reason I picked these stories is a common thread. And that common thread is aggress the aggressor. Don't become a victim. Always be on the attack. If you're being assaulted, aggress. So here we go. Father-daughter bonding time came to an abrupt end during assault in Memphis, Tennessee, but the would-be victim had a gun in his car and saved the child from further harm. The dad was carrying his infant out of the fast food restaurant to his vehicle after lunch. Along the way, four men attacked him, despite the fact that he had the child in his arms. During the scuffle, the father dropped the baby. Oh, I'd go ballistic, man. At one point, someone in the gang had the young father in a chokehold, according to the reports to a 911 dispatcher. The dad had reached into his car, retrieved a handgun, and shot one of the culprits. Troublemakers fled in a car, driving to a nearby station to get help for a wounded party. The injured man was taken to the hospital for medical care. All four aggressors have since been charged. What's your thought on that, Trey?
I'm surprised you didn't chase him down and shoot the other three, too.
Whatever happened to honorable crime?
crime isn't about honor. It's about...
No, it used to be. Man, back in the day when you watched the movies, they'd rob you and go. Now they rob you and beat you up anyway.
Well, I mean, everything I've read about it, it says there's two types of criminals. You have professional criminals. They don't want confrontation because they just want to get in, get out, and they're done. If it looks like there's going to be a confrontation, they drop it and go somewhere else, try something else. And then you have the desperate, you know, crackhead, meth head, whatever, just opportunist types.
Looking for a fight or something,
yeah.
Right?
Well, they're looking for something, and they don't think, well, if I can't get this one, I should go to the next one. They're like, ah, I got to get here, got to get this one, got to get this one. And they're the ones that are more willing to assault, to maim, to injure. So
that's why when I go from 1 to 10, what are you? 10 being constantly giggles. I say, and they say there's 7. I go, how do you know that the 1 through 7 people are just going to leave you alone if they see a gun or something? What if it's the 8, 9, and 10 person, like you just talked about, who likes to go all the way? Are you prepared for that?
Or is out of their mind and doesn't think they just go all the way because that's what they go all the way.
You got to be ready for the worst case scenario to the best of your ability. Story number 2. When 3 armed young men tried to force a convenience mart worker into a store so they could rob it, the clerk fought back, came out on top. The employee, a Marine, veteran, was taking a break from his duties behind the register and the Tennessee business when 3 strangers approached. One pointed a shotgun at him. The veteran drew his everyday carry handgun and fired, hitting the culprit in the stomach. The other 2 suspects ran off. The wounded man was charged and the police became his accomplices. There you go with a Marine, man. Charge no matter
Completely
what.
Completely not surprised.
Number 5.
Well, I mean...
That's incredible, man. You got to have some serious onions when you're facing a shotgun. A shotgun barrel looks like a cannon barrel.
Some serious onions, or you're trained as a Marine. Because, I mean, isn't that what the military is all about? Learning how to keep your head under fire when people are pointing guns at you?
It just, man, it sets them off. It's like, oh, no, you didn't just do that, you know? Okay, so once again, he aggressed the aggressor. Story number 3. An armed thief got a surprise when his intended target turned the tables on him. The young troublemaker apparently thought a man in his 60s who was withdrawing cash from an ATM would be an easy prey. The miscreant got a surprise when he found out that his would-be victim was carrying. The armed citizen, though held at gunpoint himself, drew his handgun and fired. Suspect later died. Always nice to have a happy ending. Do not judge a book by its cover.
Who's more likely to be carrying, you know, some young pup, 18, 19, 20 years old, especially considering age restrictions and all that, or an older man who, you know,
at
50s,
his point
60s.
Time in life doesn't give a rip.
Well, it's not that. You know, he's more mature. He thinks forward more. He's more likely to have the funds to be able to afford a handgun and the licensing.
And it's an equalizer. Because I know me. I mean, I can handle myself okay. And I got injuries that
just
cause
about
me to have an equalizer.
Thinking about the older gentleman I know in their 60s and 70s, they're not looking to impress anybody. They don't have to impress anybody by, you know, physically whooping them. They're like, psh, that's a young man's game. I'm just get in, get out. I'm done.
That's it. I'm out of here, man. All right. Well, that was good. They're always enjoyable. We live and learn off of the actions of others. That's why it's always such a good segment to read. Now, you've all been waiting for my opinion piece, and it kind of goes to what I'm reading here. And I've titled this week's opinion piece as, What's the Point? Ladies and gentlemen, really, what's the point? If you're looking to get a handgun for self-defense as a licensed carry holder, and you don't train properly, keyword properly, then what's the point in getting the handgun in the first place? Getting a handgun for self-defense as a licensed carry holder is one of those few topics that allow for minimal or any mistakes. There is just too much riding on you handling it correctly. I've talked about this numerous times on this show, in my licensed carry classes, and my self-defense seminars. If you're going to carry, and I'm specifically talking about carrying the weapon on you, then you need to practice all aspects of carrying a handgun properly. Shooting paper targets at the range has their application, like seeing if the gun is accurate, basically getting familiar with your handgun. But that's about it. Each week I read you true stories of people defending themselves, and not one of them simulates shooting paper targets. On the contrary, it shows chaos and the greatly unexpected. Shooting at paper targets in a relaxed environment and thinking you're upping your game is a false reality. A real-life scenario requires speed, familiarization of weapons, accuracy under stress, and mindset. None of those are achieved by simply shooting at a paper target that doesn't move. Remember now, I'm specifically and only talking about those people who wish to carry their weapon. Having a gun at home eases to a small extent the extra training that you may need, since you can compensate by using other weapons that may not be practical as a personal carry weapon. The legal aspects of mishandling your handgun is overwhelming and can be extremely expensive and life-changing. Serious thought, training, and preparedness needs to go with carrying a handgun for personal carry. No one can prepare for all scenarios that may arise in life, but you can reduce the amount that does happen to you with the proper training. So then, what's the point? What's the point of carrying a handgun for personal defense if due to your lack of training, it can cause you more harm than good? Some will say, because I can. Others will say, it makes me feel better. What needs to be said by each and every one of us who carries is, I have taken on a major responsibility where my actions, whether good or bad, can leave devastating results, and that I must train properly and thoroughly to minimize any mistakes on my part that may cause me, my family, friends, or others to receive negative results. Like Uncle Ben said to Peter Parker, with great power comes great responsibility. So in closing, I say this to all you license to carry holders and those wanting to get one. What's the point of getting a license if you're not going to do what it takes to become the best and be with it? What's the point? With that, Trey, let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to have the incredible, extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cab Adventure Radio Program. Today's July 28th, 2018, and as you heard, that was Devil Went Down to Georgia. And Charlie, you know why I did that. Got a faithful listener give me a call, ask me questions, and I told him I had a special surprise today, and that's your surprise, buddy. Just thinking about you. Thanks for listening. Spread the word. Give us a call here if you want, 697-6633. Now, to my left is attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. Ross, what's going on, buddy?
Man, excited to be here. Got a great topic. I got some entourage with me today, you know.
You got some exciting got stuff folks. Going on here.
Yeah, I got my, come here, Tim. I got my buddy, my strong safety from Henderson State University right here.
How we doing there?
Yeah, leader of the defense back in the day, you know. He gained a little weight, you know, I guess we're getting older. But then we got Rick Momey here. I think he's going to do some interviews, going to talk. But these guys are good friends, some business associates. So I'm glad that they're here today. And also got some good topics about the clashing of the First Amendment, technology, and the law, and how it's outdated and what we're going to do. And we're also going to talk about some marital property issues, divorce, and what to do with your firearms, and maybe how you're going to have consequences when, you know, with your significant other or your paramour. So
I think we had this too, right?
Oh, and some 3D printers, weapons. So I ain't going to start, you know.
Well, with us, Ross, the way it is, we talk about one thing. I text you, say, this is what we're going to do. And we basically say, okay. And then before you know it, by the end of the show, it's like, started at A and B, and we're at Y and Z.
And we talked about everything's intertwined in the law. And so we get into these gray areas, and it opens up other areas. And so that's just how it works.
All right, well, let's do it. Let's get started. We want to get started with.
Yeah, let's talk about the 3D guns. So I'm glad that you asked me, is it going to be illegal to print the blueprints for the 3D weapons, you know, so 3D printers.
And we mentioned that last week, right?
Can somebody make their own weapon? We talked about, can somebody make their own weapon out of plastic using these 3D printers? And I said, yeah, I thought that you could make your own weapon. I even thought you could probably sell them as long as you're not selling to the nature and degree to be considered, you know, a manufacturer. I think you could make your own weapon. I think you could sell one or two of them, you know, just because you didn't like them or for whatever reason. But you don't want to get into to enough sales to be looking like a dealer. And you had asked me, well, what about making those 3D blueprints available online to print the weapon? And I said, I don't see how that's even a problem. I think there'd be a First Amendment issue. I didn't even know. I didn't even.
I knew something you didn't know?
Yeah. I didn't even know that this case was pending. Cody Wilson, defense distributed as a little Austin area. The kid was in law school. He drops out of law school because he's basically a libertarian activist for Second Amendment. And so he wants to make this website and data available to everybody. And so he starts uploading these blueprints to make your own 3D printed guns. And in like 2 weeks, he's got well over 100,000 downloads. By the time it's over, he's got over 1 million downloads. And here comes, you know, the feds and the U.S. State Department send him a letter saying, whoa, you're in violation.
Why, though? What's the violation? I wanted to ask you, though, is this court case against him being able to sell the prints? Because if you had let's say you had your own prints, you can make the gun. That's not the issue. But why is it an issue for him to sell the prints?
The court case is interesting. It's not actually the state bringing a case against him. He brought him and his entourage of nonprofits brought a case against the government. So essentially what happens is the State Department says you're trafficking internationally in firearms because there was some downloads coming from overseas. And so you're violating international trafficking laws and not able to do this is the same as violating, you know, customs and commodities, things like this. Those are regulated. And so the same with firearms, especially with firearms, highly regulated. And so he's talked to a lawyer, said, man, what do I do? He took it down, didn't want to go to jail. You know, there were several civil and criminal penalties that could have happened to this kid. And so he takes it down, get lawyers up, gets the political activist community involved, right? They file suit against the State Department for, among other things, First Amendment rights. And two, it's just not, it's not international trafficking just to post something on the internet.
That'd be just like, yeah, exactly.
You're not dealing, you're not dealing in a foreign country just because somebody in a foreign country happens to download something that you posted here. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they said. He ends up winning big. He ends up winning big. The State Department ends up paying his legal fees. And they end up saying you can make pretty much all of these firearms available online, except, of course, for some automatic machine guns and some other things that would probably be illegal.
It won't last more than three shots anyway. But
so let's see, you know, we'll see what happens. I think, you know, this is very interesting. And my buddy Tim's, you know, arguing with me. He's got this, got the California politics fresh in his mind. And so, and he's crazy. We're talking about open carry. He's like, you guys can actually just head out in the open.
Yeah, we're not a communist country.
but he's having fun down here. It's too hot, though, isn't it? It's really hot. But anyway.
I got the AC going, but it's too
hot. So he's telling me, what about purchasing it? Is the same as if you're clicking and purchasing it? I think that's going to run some issues, and we don't know what that case is going to be. This settlement that the State Department came with is a very narrow, like, settlement. I haven't seen those documents, obviously, but we don't know exactly how far this is going to extend. But, you know, you're going to have a First Amendment right to post information online for download, for distribution. And that's absolutely protected by the First Amendment. There's even been cases of people write books on how to be a serial killer, how to be a murderer, and those books even end up being
sell like hotcakes
in a lot of situations. So this is definitely nothing wrong with this type of speech. Nothing more than how to build your own firearm. Okay, and this was a big deal, by the way, because 3D printing is highly technical. The specifications about how to make one of these weapons is highly technical.
That's why I was making a comment. It's not that big a thing to worry about. It costs so much money for the equipment. The gun doesn't last that long anyway. One or two shots, it's gone. It's not like you're going to be doing mass murders out there.
Right, but it, you know, and it does cost, like you said, money to buy the 3D printer. And for the layman, there was no way that they could have come up with the specifications on their own. It would take years of practice, or you'd have to have some kind of expert help. And that's exactly what these 3D designs do. You basically can put these 3D designs into the printer and we'll do it, so you don't have to figure out how to do it. Okay, so that's that. I think some takeaways was, like I said, posting something on the internet available to download overseas is not international trafficking of firearms. But I wanted to point out there was another Supreme Court case this year about online merchants and sales taxes. So there was a thing about mail order documents. Mail order documents, you didn't have to pay sales tax wherever you mailed those documents to. Supreme Court overruled that decision. And now online marketers say in Cameron, Texas, if I got something, a product I'm selling online, and somebody in Illinois, right, wants to buy it, I'm going to have to pay sales tax in Illinois, right, in that municipality, and I'm going to have to know what those sales taxes are. So I would say that's another reason to get a lawyer if you're trying to start up a small business, because you need to make sure that those company documents, your website, everything is tailored, okay, to be able to...
What is that specifically on?
Online merchants. So
any type of product.
Yes, maybe. I mean,
that's crazy.
I read the entire opinion, but so I'm not going to say every single product, but generally speaking, products in general, yes.
Do you know how many people will not do that because they don't know what they're doing?
Exactly,
which puts everybody in jeopardy.
A super headache. This was a big case, and so you say, you know, if they're considered to be selling at the location where the information is being downloaded, right? That's what I'm saying. It's going to be a hot topic. Technology, the law is seriously behind technology. And so as trends go on, as technology moves forward, as time moves forward, we're going to see a lot of clashes. We're going to see a lot more things and a lot more money for lawyers. Okay, so...
you're going to have that extension on the back of your house looking a lot
better. I'm ready, baby. I'm gearing up.
Did you download those blueprints? Did you download those blueprints?
Fifth Amendment. I plead the fifth.
Okay.
So
wait, now wait. I want to show... In the video, when I see it probably next week, this is from the Telegram. A picture, you can just Google it, but there's a picture of the initial gun that they built, the shotgun, and after like one or two shots, it just disintegrated. But it was just kind of cool that you could build it with a 3D printer. It was just a neat idea. Giggles, right? So, you know, what's great about that is if you're in some foreign country and you got a 3D printer and you need to just take one shot, voila, in about an hour or two, you got yourself a nice single shot.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
So, Also, another takeaway, it's been some good First Amendment issues this year. So for the small business owner, remember we had Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission about the gay rights versus religious freedom. And did he have a right to not sell to homosexuals? I have no problem with homosexuality, that's fine. You want to do that? I think I was on the position of the cake maker in this small business. You have a right to serve whoever you want to serve.
That's right.
And I don't think anybody has a right to come in there and tell you who you have to serve and what it's for.
Be different than state funded or something like that, but private, hell.
Okay, so the Supreme Court, actually, we talked about that in here. It just hadn't gone to the Supreme Court yet. It did. They upheld that case for the cake maker. So I'm just saying there's some First Amendment rights that aren't being put to the wayside just because, you know, trends and technology and fashions are growing in a different direction. I wanted to point out, you didn't want to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it anyway. It was a big case, Carpenter versus United States, 5-4 decision, very close decision. It's a Fourth Amendment case. I always talk about the Fourth Amendment as one of my favorites. First and Fourth Amendments, don't even start with me because you're going to be there all day if we were at the coffee shop. Okay, and I tell you, it's useless. Fourth Amendment is useless. Well, thank goodness there's one shot for the defense lawyers. Okay, the FBI was going in there and getting cell site information off of your cell phones. They were doing this without a warrant. I'm not saying that information is not available, but what cell site information is, we probably know there's towers. There's also other satellite, right? And as we move, right, our cell phone is picking up on those. They're pinging those different locations or pinpointing based on the satellite, and that's called cell site location information. And this has been very important for me. I've actually got clients off to say, look, they weren't even over here at the time that this happened. I've used that information or said, look, this person was over here with this. This is how we know that there was an issue with this. So, but the government was going to the cell phone companies, right, and pulling this data, and they were getting all of the data. So they were actually just able to put a profile. Remember, we talked about profiling, put a profile on the individual. This is intrusive. Because think about if they don't really have anything. Okay, in this case, in this case, this guy was probably did rob. It probably was, and I don't know anything about really the facts other than what the holding was and the essential parts of the holding. I don't really know about the facts of that case. Even if he was guilty here, this is a good ruling because this would essentially let government go into the cell phone companies and just survey everybody and just put together profiles, dossiers on anybody that they wanted to. And the reason is because it's in the hands of third parties. And so traditionally, if it's in the hands, information's in the hands of third parties, there's no expectation of privacy. You've already relinquished your right to privacy by giving this over to third parties who can look at it anytime they want to. Supreme Court says, no, man, a cell phone is different. Cell phone has all of your privacies.
Yeah.
We don't expect.
Exactly.
It's not just like
we talked about that. It's like the extension of your brain, you know? It's like your personal thoughts and memoirs and all that's in your phone.
And it tracks. It's tracking you everywhere you're going. And we talked about this. The only reason there's this conspiracy out there that the only reason they wanted these smartphones to get out in the market is so the government could track you.
Well, that's true.
Okay. And so they could track you essentially. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but it is true. The government was doing it in this case.
Look, I'm not going to argue with this conspiracy thing, but I'm telling you, it's a fact. If the government has the ability to do it, they're going to use it to their advantage so they can do it.
Exactly.
Will they do it on a daily basis just for giggles? I don't know. Will they do it when they need to find something? You're damn right they will.
Right. And what if they just want to spy on their girlfriend or something like that? Who's to stop them from doing that if they can just simply go to the
I've
provider?
Heard stories.
I mean, it's you know, those things do happen. You said they don't, but they do. Woo! So that's the update. Current
Remember
updates
what we said A to
laws.
Z? We were started at A, B, and C. We went over to X, Y, and Z. We just went right in the middle. So
I had to get that tangent there about the Fourth Amendment. Okay. It was a big win. It was a big win on privacy and data, okay? So guns and marital property, what we're dealing with right now, it's the topic you wanted. We talked about this in depth in one show that was not recorded. Thank you, Matt.
Anyway, it wasn't my bad, man. It was not my bad.
So for you live listeners, you're probably going to get a re-education in some spots. I'm just going to hit the high points, right? We can't get down into the minutia. We don't really have the time, but we did want to go back over it. I think some of this kind of comes into play. If you get divorced, we talked about separate property and community property. Community property is going to be anything that you acquire during marriage, okay, that's not acquired by gift, inheritance, or devise. In other words, if you get an inheritance from your mother, it's not community property. It's your separate property. If somebody gave you a gift, that's not community property. That's separate property. Community property is going to mean that your significant other, your spouse, has an interest in that property. Now, we're not going to get into the, like I said, the specifics about sole management community property, right, and joint management community property. There is right? I'll say this, that if you have sole management community property, you can probably deal with that property.
Clarify that.
Sole management community property is property that maybe wages from your work that you have in your own personal bank account, right? Okay. A car that you purchase with your own personal wages and your wife has her own car. Those would be, each would have their sole management community property, okay? And so you could probably deal with that. But your spouse does have some kind of interest, even though you have a right to deal with it. But it's all presumed to be joint community property. So, say, well, those are my guns. I'm getting the guns. Well, she's got a right to have the guns.
Say, what?
Okay, so.
How the heck does that happen?
That's a great reason right there.
But you have these issues. What if,
The curtains are yours, baby, but the guns, man, come on.
And so we see these cases, right? We see these cases, always a strategic advantage, right? There's always these strategic advantages that spouses and couples try to take in these family law cases, and I hate it. And, you know, the great lawyer that we always talk about, Michelle Lemkuhl and Rockdale, we always get into these great battles. And as I said, we talked about the Facebook that time. We essentially just throw our hands up to this point because she and I have fought tooth and nail on several cases, and we're just wore out. We're just wore out on Facebook. It's like, man, here's the code. You go get it. I'm not getting it for you. Okay, so these things can be time-consuming, expensive, just stressful for the family. They can tear a family
apart.
But wait
a minute. Clarify. If you're serious about half the guns, what's the deal about that? Or are you just being facetious to a certain extent?
No, I'm not. So I was saying there's these strategic moves that these couples try to make, and one of them is to make a restraining order. Okay, or a protective order. Okay, and so this is where we get into the real issue with the restraining orders and protective orders. Restraining order is technically just a temporary restraining order, just saying, hey, nobody removes any property or does we maintain the status quo until we can have a temporary orders hearing. At the temporary orders hearing, they're going to be more defined. The judge is going to make certain decisions about the case going forward, because couples will fight. If this is not done, couples will go back and forth, each one just trying to take a little bit more and a little bit more. Each one's going to go for it. It's going to escalate, and then you're going to have a family violence or something crazy, okay? And so we don't want, you know, the wife or husband, as soon as the case is filed, go yank all the money out of the bank accounts, right? So we file a temporary restraining order almost in every single divorce. That in and of itself is probably not going to cause an issue possessing firearms, but it can. Lawyers will routinely throw something in there about prohibiting the use of possession or manipulation or use of a firearm during the case until we have a hearing, and the judges won't look at it.
That's bridging now into LTC, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then the judge will just sign that order, right? And before you know it, we've got this restraining order. And if you got a good lawyer, they're going to file a motion to quash that. You can't prevent me from carrying a firearm just because you're filing a divorce case. But a lot of lawyers don't, right? Also, you're going to have maybe some allegations. And there was a federal case that happened a couple years ago. And it was nothing more than a restraining order, okay, that had some issues about the husband did some actions. And so he did an agreed restraining order. It wasn't a protective order, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but a protective order is more serious, right? This was a restraining order. He did an agreed restraining order saying that, you know, he went over to the house and he wasn't supposed to, and then he agreed that he would not go back over to the premises and would refrain from committing family violence. Boom! That language right there triggers some federal statute, okay, that allowed the feds to come back and charge him with a felony on the federal level for possessing a firearm. Because he had been subject to a restraining order that involved family violence or family domestic violence. And so he appealed, and we did this. There was some cases, there was litigation that went on, and he said, dude, it wasn't even a protective order. It was a restraining order that I agreed to, and all I would do was agreeing not to commit family violence. Right? I was just agreeing to the allegations. So it's very important. If there's allegations made about family violence and things to that effect, and this is going on, do not let the other lawyers say, well, it's just a restraining order. It doesn't really affect you. No, you don't want that language in there. I think it would be okay for you.
Yeah, but you're making it sound like let's just say it's me, and I go over there. You're making it sound like it's just me fighting against them. I'd have you next to me to make sure that doesn't happen, right?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. You need to make sure your lawyer doesn't say, oh, it's just a restraining order. It's not going to do anything. No, that's not true.
It sounds like what you're saying is their lawyer does not have your best interest in mind.
Well, I'm saying lawyer too. This was new. So a lot of lawyers would say, because it was a restraining order, it wasn't a protective order. This wasn't a family violence issued type of order. And so it's not a big deal. You can agree to it. No, the feds don't care. Feds don't care how it's labeled. If it's got the language in there and you're admitting to something that's arguably in a gray area of family violence involving that, you're putting yourself subject to making a risk falling underneath those federal statutes we talk about routinely that prohibit you from possessing a firearm.
How did the feds become aware of it in the first place?
Good question. I was going to ask the same thing. It'd probably be the opposing attorney.
Sounds like
saying,
it was a tactical move of the.
And it very well could have been, right? But there, I mean, I don't. I, maybe in the facts of that case, if he had a job application.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you got a question,
I mean, there could have been many reasons.
This is a topic that can affect a lot of people. So if you got a question, give us a call 254-697-6633. If you don't take advantage of it and you have that situation, you can talk to an attorney like Ross here for free. You're foolish. 254-697-6633. Give a call. Take advantage of it now.
And so then we got protective orders. Protective orders are a strategic tool as well. A lot of times the other side is going to allege family violence happened, right? For several reasons. You're going to have child custody issues. If family violence has happened and the judge finds that it did happen, not even in a criminal case, if the judge finds that family violence has occurred and will likely occur in the future for a protective order, then that's going to allow them to ask for sole custody as far as the kids. It's also going to allow them to get an unjust and unright division of the property. So a division of property is supposed to be just and right. If family violence has occurred and you have proved that, the judge finds that he can grant the wife everything, give you nothing. Say that's how bad, that's how much of a POS you are, okay? And so we're not giving you anything. And probably not going to do that extreme, but definitely may give them a whole lot more than what they would otherwise be entitled. So there's every incentive and motive to make up, do a he said, she said. Sweet little girl gets on the stand in front of the jury and says, he hit me, and he starts crying. What are you going to do? You better have a good lawyer. You better be able to go into the fact and really just assess the situation and just tear her apart. Okay, now it'd be perjury, and that'd be a reason why she wouldn't want to do it. I think in that bad of a situation, you might have a case, which is why we met Rick Momey, okay, because there was unjust influences and horrific strategy moves being played in a family law case, and we ended up finding out it got my client charged, two clients charged with first degree felonies. We ended up having to file a separate civil case here in Milam County. The jury, Milam County jury, awarded $3.9 million verdict. It was actually like a $4 million verdict. And during the collection process is how we went. Rick, trying to collect all of the assets that we essentially took from this lady, from everything that she took from my client. Okay, and so there are avenues for relief, and you just got to make sure that if this happens, you need to have the money, one, hey, right?
Ross,
but you need to have the commitment.
Ross,
right, to
do you feel in the course of time, in the course of years, that this divorce situation has gotten very ruthless, out of hand and ruthless? You know, back in the day, it was like, hey, this ain't working between us. You know, you go your way, I'll go my way. Just give me the TV because I bought that. You keep the car. Obviously, we'll work out the kids' situation. But now it seems like it's ruthless. What's going on?
I think it has actually gotten a little bit better from the Supreme Court's making the free forms available online for anybody just to go. And I think people are realizing, hey, I don't need a lawyer for this. I can just do an agree. I think people are starting to see that, man, this can get expensive. And so maybe it's a good thing that the lawyers and stuff are charging so much. But we do still have those cases. I mean, Michelle and I talk, and she's like, I can't believe that this kid. And I can't believe that they can't get along in this. So, I mean, there are these cases. That just like I said, there's a breakdown of the family unit. You talk about the problems that we're having and the things that really affect this country. And I always start with, the breakdown of the family nucleus, yep, I think, has been a major part of why we have the thing happening.
And that started in the 60s, but we're not going to go in that type of conversation.
Right.
But it is when it happened.
And so let's talk about child custody, though, to end on this. You need to be aware. I've talked about that jury trial before.
Well, let's get her on what you two can argue.
Yeah, she'd be fun to play around with on arguments.
And of course she's listening, right?
Oh, I'm sure she is.
Okay,
come
on. Give me a call, 254-697-6633. Let's get you on.
And so, and that's why Rick, he's like, man, I'm not, Rick Dodd. This is why he's out of this. I'm doing personal injury. This family law stuff is crazy. We talked about the CPS cases and things to that effect, but I've been in jury trials. I've been in bench trials. I've been in the administrative cases where how you handle a firearm, right, is really going to come back to affect you. And I told you, I think, a few shows ago that It's usually the mom, but it's not necessarily male oriented, but I usually hear the argument from that side. Well, dad has firearms, okay, and those are dangerous. The kids don't need to go over there. That kind of argument just irks me. Well, has he ever done anything? Has he ever used them inappropriately? No, he just has them over there.
You know, you just said something that made me think about, somebody told me a story at the shop last night. They were in a location, and they happened to see print handgun in their holster. It's not illegal because there was no signs of. And the lady goes up to him and says, you need to leave. Why? You have a gun on. There's no signs posted, man. No, but I have my child here. Well, then you might as well leave because I got the right to stay here. The attitude, the concept, the thought process of these guns scaring people, it's ridiculous, man. It's crazy.
And it's just gone away from the society where I think kids are not offended. Exactly that too. Oh,
and then there's the fact that we fear what we don't understand. And let's face it, gun education, we've talked about this before, gun education is not as widespread as it needs to be.
And this is what we don't hold back. You know, we want people to be educated and knowledgeable.
Look, in less than 25 years, it's got to this. I came down here from New York, okay, to Texas, and I had my 12-gauge Remington Model 11 in the back window of my truck, and I had sheriff's deputy pull me over thinking I was in trouble. He goes, "Hey, man, is that a Browning?" That's the attitude. Now it's like, oh, my God, you've got a gun in your closet, and they freak out. It's just gone for, in 25 years, not even 25 years, probably 10 to 15 years, ever since 9/11, man. 9/11 is increasing, but more so right around about 10 years ago. You're crazy.
And that's why if you're in a family law case, you need to be careful about how you store your weapons and about how these are kept and about how you portray yourself with these, because those will be used against you. I promise. If there's any evidence, right, that you've not done something if you've done something you weren't supposed to do with these weapons, like not kept them in a safe place, left it out on the table, making it possibly accessible to a child, which you talked about. There's also if you've brandished it or used it in a way that is even concerning, right? We had just what is the case in Belton with C.J. Grisham? Where the lady called in and said, well, these are concerning. Or isn't that what she said? Something like that. It was odd. The way they were carrying the weapons was odd. And so she calls the police, an emergency line, because people were oddly carrying weapons. It was just that they were carrying weapons, which is what made it odd. But just be careful about how you use them and what you have. And if you're going to have these, make sure you got the safe and you handle them properly so that there can't ever be an allegation that you don't handle properly.
I was given a question.
Watch Facebook.
I was given a question. Maybe you can answer this off the top of your head, okay? I know you can't give me a definite, but let's use a Bursa handgun, for example, because we talked about how, let's say the gun is on the table, the magazine's out, there's nothing in the chamber. You still say that's reckless. But what if this gun, the Bursa gun that has an internal gun lock, is locked? The key's been put on and turned it. The gun becomes an inert piece of metal. You cannot use it. How would that stand? The child had access to it, your opinion.
And the magazine was in?
Okay, we'll say it's in, but trust me, I know what I'm talking about in this one, okay?
I know, was the magazine in?
Let's just say, yes, we'll say, yes, it is. The magazine's in the gun, okay, nothing in the chamber, which doesn't matter, it's still considered loaded, but the key mechanism, turn it, the gun is inert, you cannot use it until you unlock it, internal lock.
Say that it's locked. And I realize that you cannot use it. I realize you cannot use it. It would not be fireable, right? But under the definition...
Could there be an exception to that definition? Because let's say somebody bought that gun specifically because they wear the key thing around their neck. So they have quick access to it, but they don't want to put their child in danger. So they thought it out. They said, here's what I can do. I use that particular type of gun. Smith & Wesson's do it as well. I did that specifically because I did not want to be in violation of that law.
I think that's the gun you want. You want to leave it on the nightstand at night.
Stocks of Taurus and Smith & Wesson just went up.
I think because, look, you got to have some practicals in these things, too. Remember, the first thing I learned in law school is torch class. Torch one. Very first class I had. And we're talking about trespass. Okay, and she tells us the definition of trespass. Says this, that the guy crosses over the fence, walks on the grass, right, and realizes it's the wrong pasture. But he continues one more step, and then he walks off. And she's asking, is that trespass? And there's all these kids talking about, they're giving very technical arguments. And then, you know, nobody's getting the right answer. She says, no, it's not trespass unless you get caught. Okay? And so unless you get caught, it's not a trespass. And so you got to realize... You're probably not going to have this situation.
It's like I'd be in jail today. I just haven't gotten caught.
So, hey, man, plead the fifth. Tell me. So it's kind of like if they go and take the weapon and if they take it to school, you're going to get in trouble. If you see them grab the firearm, yes, they were made accessible, but nobody else knows but you and the child.
After $10,000 and a good attorney, and I prove it to the court that I did it not intentionally, I'd be good to go, right?
And if it absolutely cannot fire, you know that there's no danger there. No, there's no day. I'm not going to. You're trying to get me to admit I'm expensive.
What about if, in a similar case, you have the firearm, but it has a gun lock on it, and the gun lock is active, but the magazine is nearby?
That's not right, because the magazine is not loaded. It's not readily destroyed.
But you made that comment that it could be potentially reckless.
I would argue in your situation that it's not that it's not readily dischargeable. But I'm just telling you.
What makes the difference is the magazine being present in the firearm.
Even in the gun that he's talking about, if the magazine's in there, I would argue that. I think that there's a really good argument for that. But I'm telling you.
I bring it up.
I'm not
going to
tell you that's
legal right
now. Tons
of people in my classes who ask me that question. That's why I bring up all these different freaking scenarios.
I'm not going to tell you, sitting right here with my license on the line, to do that. And think that it's legal.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, I think under the definition,
but you
right,
see that
the
answer
state
that you get
is going to be able to charge you for it being readily discharged.
But that answer you're giving is a good answer to the person listening because they go, oh, it's one of those where I don't want to go down that path.
Exactly.
I want to make it clean. I'm not looking for you to commit yourself.
I think there's a good argument to be made, but I also think under the words of the law, right, you have technically, there is a technical violation.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is why I say, if you don't pay attention to this segment of the show, you're crazy. Because what he's giving you the answers. When he doesn't give you the answer, that's a clear answer that you might want to change your policy on how you do things, okay? If he says no or yes, hey, man, I'm going to stick by it because the man knows what he's talking about. All right, look, times are ticking away. Ross, we are sponsored by Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Rick Dodd, awesome, sponsors the program. Part of it with all the other sponsors. You come on, attorney extraordinary, you do a fantastic job. Why don't you tell everybody how they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so with Rick being here, we're both private investigators too. I have my private PI license. We're employed by Mr. Howard over there at the partnership in Houston. We do some work there. Rick will talk about that in the segment later.
People are thinking Rick Dodd.
Oh, Richard Lee Momey, Rick Momey. Okay, and so Rick Momey is going to be the one on the interview here a little bit later. You can also call my law office. We do have Lone Star Recovery Company, too, which is Rick Momey's going to talk about here later. But my law office for these LTC questions, we love responding to the listeners. We love advancing the issues. If you want to do that, you can email me at Benton, B-E-N-T-O-N, at Watson.legal. That's Benton at Watson.legal. Or just come see me at 105 East Main Street. I've got the milk cow and the really odd gray-looking stucco building right on the back now since we're building on. And then you can call me at 254-605-4140. That's 254-605-4140. And make sure you call, too, about any appointments in Houston or you want some PI work, some recovery work, collections. We love judgment, collecting judgments, right? And Rick's been Rick Momey's been a good receiver for me. You can hit me up. If you do, on email, make sure you leave your phone number so that I can call you back. We get questions a lot, and some people don't leave their phone number when they email. And sometimes I can't get to the email, but I can call you. So make sure you leave your phone number.
Sounds great. Okay, everybody, look, we're going to take a quick break, Trey, and give me a short commercial break. I'll come back to some topics of interest, and then we'll get set up for the delicious Janae Goodman. That's right, everybody. We are back. Today's July 28, 2018 here. We're live still for about another hour and 5 minutes. Had an awesome segment with attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. We got a lot of action and chatter going on here in the studio. But right now, I want to give you some dates that are coming up here. August 4th. That's, what, next Saturday, right? 2 p.m. is my next license to carry class. I still got slots available for it. It's $60 for a new person. If you already have your license and you just want a little refresher, it's $40. I don't have to do extra paperwork on you. That's why the price difference. Give me a call. Give me an email. You can go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the LTC page. There's an email link there. Send me an email and confirm that you want to go into the class or give me a call later on, and we'll give you some details as to what's going on. That's Saturday, August 4th, 2 p.m. is the next license to carry class. Now, let's go over the Fridays of the month. The first Friday of the month is 2 for Night at Aaron's Gun Shop, the gun range. You bring a guest, they shoot for free. Range time is free for your guest. That's every first Friday of the month. Second Friday of the month, the round robin competition. And ladies and gentlemen, if you heard my opinion piece and I talked to you about how you have to have mindset and speed and accuracy under stress instead of just shooting at a piece of paper, the round robin, I designed it that way on purpose to accommodate those needs. So if you have not done one, you need to do one. I've got new people coming in there. They're enjoying it. They're all a lot of homegrown, very good pistol shooters coming out of Aaron's Gun Shop. They're getting good training. They're consistent, and they're very good at handling firearms, not of their own as well, but others, and being able to handle malfunctions and still shoot under stress time with accuracy. So you need to do it. That's the second Friday of the month. Third Fridays of the month is ladies' night. Trey, help me on this again. If you associate as a what?
If you identify.
Identify. Whatever.
As a specific gender.
If you identify as a woman or a lady, you get range time free that night, okay? I'm not judging you. I just don't know the freaking terminology. We'll let people judge on that one. Seminars. If you want extra training, advanced training, Aaron's Gun Shop is the place to go. Or you can spend $3,000 or so and go to Pahrump, Nevada to Front Sight. I teach the same darn thing. for like $165, and I give you a barbecue lunch for free, okay? We go over all sorts of things. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the High Cap Adventure page, look at all the different seminars that we have to offer. Five or more will set you up, get you squared away on the road to enlightenment on how to use your weapons in a very good self-defense and tactical, if necessary, mode. So give us a call or check us out, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. All sorts of good videos. Trey, let's get that delicious Janae Goodman on here for another segment of Tactical Snacking. And this week it's going to be summer cold remedies. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's July 28, 2018. We're here on the Product Spotlight, and I've got Rick Momi. All right, sitting next to me here. This guy's incredible, man. I can't wait to talk to him on the interview. But he's going to help me out a little bit here on the Product Spotlight, because what I'm talking about is the AR-15 and 7.62x39. It's not the AR platform. Obviously, that's a common platform. I was specifically talking about this one because this is a niche gun for me. I've got different calibers and ARs for specific purposes. And this one here, I just wanted a basic AR rifle that was close quarter, in the sense if I see a hog or whatever and it's close, I can use open sights, take it down with enough punch. And the AK-47 round, 7.62x39 round, is a good potent round for that. So I'm going to read a couple of bits and pieces of a couple of different articles, and then I may give a few commentaries, show a picture of it, and I want to talk about the mags too. And then, Rick, you can throw in your commentaries, okay?
Not a problem.
This is from alloutdoor.com. Why a 7.62x39 AR-15 upper? Because the reason I say upper is because there's so many different configurations out there. Let's just talk about these. Some people will ask why you would ever want a 7.62x39 AR-15 upper. Beyond the cost savings, the 7.62x39 is actually a more versatile round in many respects than the 5.56 NATO round, and has proven itself a better deer and hog round by AK-47 hunters. Heck, the 7.62x39 round is basically just an up-powered 30-30 round, which is arguably the most successful deer hunting round in America. The 7.62x39 delivers more energy than a 5.56 NATO, 223 Remington, or 300 Blackout out to 200-yard mark, which is where over 95% of training, plinking, defensive, and hunting shooting is done, depending on what unit you're in, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, this one's from the AmericanRifleman.org. So, what's up with the 7.62x39mm and AR rifles? There's a modern trend going on with a retro cartridge these days. Originally developed for use on the Germans during World War II, December 1943, the cartridge we know as the 7.62x39mm cartridge was first used by the Red Army in the SKS carbine in 1945 and then became almost synonymous with the world's most produced firearm, the AK-47. If being 71 years old does not qualify a cartridge for retro, I'm not sure what would. But it turns out the 7.62x39mm has many advantages for civilians as well. First of all, with a bullet designed for expansion, it is pretty good short to medium range hunting cartridge. You doubt me? Ballistically, it delivers similar performance to the 30-30 Winchester. And like I said in my short video, and if you go to the video on aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me holding it real quick. I mentioned it's a 30-30 on steroids with a high-capacity mag. So it's a really good gun. No one doubts that hunting... the hunting credentials of that cartridge. And the 7.62x39mm offers intermediate 30 cal power out of the basic AR platform on the cheap. Bill Ruger recognized the cartridge's potential when he introduced the Mini 30, and I bought it the first year it came out, too, back in 1987. And of course, Colt started chambering its Sportern 7.62x39 in 92, and other makers have followed suit since. Armalite, Bushmaster, Delton, Double Star, DPMS, MGI Olympic, and Rock River have offered complete rifles and or uppers for the AR platform in 7.62x39mm. No doubt there are others, likely more on the way. The real reason why ARs in 7.62x39mm are coming to the forefront is affordable ammunition. Essentially, you can spend as much as you want on 7.62x39mm. Want American-made Boxer Prime? Brass-cased hunting loads? No problem. New lacquered steel case production from a former Warsaw pack plant? Got it. How about cheap corrosive stuff unearthed under a former Soviet warehouse? You can take your pick, and it's usually in stock. And it's all great reasons. It's just another, it's a niche gun for me. I'm going to show it to you on video here. What's the first thing we do? Let me hear the collective answer. That's right. We check to make sure it's clear. Magazine out, chamber clear, weapon on safe. Bolts open. There it is. Okay. It's a standard AR platform. I'm showing it in the video. And I wanted to make one thing visible here. Rick, if you'd hold that for me. And Rick, jump in if you got a comment or anything.
Okay.
When I first got this weapon, the mag's clear, right? Chamber's clear. I'm going to insert it into the weapon just to show you how this 30 round mag sticks down. That's awkward for me. I don't like it. I prefer the length of a 30 round mag of a 5.56, but that extends out further. I finally got my 20 round mags. for 7.62x39. And if you'll notice, it is now about the length of a 30-round 5.56 mag. So it makes it much more maneuverable as compared to this long thing sticking out. It always hits. I always have a tendency to hit it. Now, if you're desperate and you want to go 5-round magazines, you could use a standard AR mag in 5.56 and use 5 rounds in that magazine, and it'll look like that. Now, I want to make something clear. This is, people ask, well, what's the problem with the 7.62 being into an AR platform? It's because the way the AK-47 mag is designed, it was designed for that mag, right? It's got this long banana arch. You'll notice this mag, showing it, it comes straight down, then arcs. The straight part is what is consumed by the magazine well, as you can see. When I take the magazine out, you're going to notice that straight part right about where the mag catch is goes into the magazine well, and it's straight, okay? I can get 5 rounds into a standard AR mag, 5.56 mag, because those rounds are within the straight part of the mag. But once you get past the mag starts to arc too much. A normal AR mag cannot handle the design of a 7.62x39 cartridge. That's why you have so many difficulties finding the right type of mag. C Products figured it out, and they made these mags where it went down straight past the mag catch and then flared out. So the mags out there are very good. They work great. I tested them out. But if worst case scenario, you can always use a 5.56 mag, any size you want. But the first 5 rounds using 7.62x39, and it will work just fine. Rick, you got any comments on that round?
I do. I do like the 7.62. I would prefer a 5-shot, but then again, you know, for our less avid hunter, they may need a little bit larger capacity off the hunt.
Maybe so. Okay? Yeah.
But as well, we all know here in Texas, we do have a lot of hogs kind of thing. You may
herd set them, yeah.
A nice little herd. You know, you may take out 4 or 5.
That's
know?
Right.
You need.
Now, you can get cheap Full Metal Jacket rounds, real cheap, real cheap. You can get soft tip and hollow points for not too much more, maybe $1 more, I don't know. But I'm using soft tips of mine or hollow points, and when it hits, it's devastating. It knocks down the animal, no problem. So I want you to go to ANC Firearms. They can get you what you need in the AR platform. They got 5.56, they can get you 7.62x39, 300 blackout, whatever it is, no problem. The only other difference on the 7.62x39, obviously, is the barrel diameter, and then you have the bolt. The bolt carrier is the same, but the actual bolt that extracts the cartridge from the chamber is different. Obviously, it's got to be a little bit bigger in diameter to fit the circumference of the cartridge compared to a 5.56. But call ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard on the radio. Order your AR-15 and whatever platform you want, 5.56, 7.62x39, 308, 300 blackout. They can handle it. Give them a call, 254-983-4417. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have the awesome Rick Nomi.
Everybody wants to know me.
Nomi.
That's
okay.
Why.
This guy's got a history, and we're going to find out. See you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cabin Adventure Radio program. It's July 28th, 2018, and to my left, I have Rick Nomi, because I want to get...
Everybody wants to know me. That's the thing. You know, and if I'm working for you, it's going to cost you more money. That's how that works.
I have no idea where to start with you. I've got all these notes, all this stuff in my head. I'm going to initially say this just to get it out. You're 20 years U.S. spec op operator, okay?
Aye.
And you got 3 years of French Foreign Legion service under your belt as well.
Yes, I do.
That's what, like, popped my flags there. I'm like, I got to know about this stuff, because you hear about it, but I want the inside scoop. A lot of people have been hearing about U.S. Spec Ops and the thing that you wear on your head, the Green Beret and Black Beret, or now it's the Tan Beret.
You know what? Apparently, they can't get the right guy to figure out the right color, okay? I was never there. That never happened. That's the number one thing. Everybody just, you know, that's how it should operate. You know, we're not any different than anybody else. I don't care what color the beret is, because you know what? I had the red one, I had the black one, and I had the green one.
Okay.
We're all brothers. It don't matter.
That's right. Amen to that. But I'll tell you what, Rick. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We got about maybe 20 minutes here. So let's burn about 3 minutes on who you are, what you've done, and then we can get in the nitty gritty. Okay.
Okay. Well, I was a bullet stopper like everybody else. I went through Harmony Church in Sand Hill. You know, walk in a man, come out a legend for all those grunts that are just like me. I went from there to airborne school onto the 75th Ranger Battalion. From there, ended up at Fort Bragg after some specific training in other places, Sear School and that kind of stuff, Jungle School down there in Panama. Also did operate in Just Cause and that kind of thing. I've operated in about 78 different countries, been shot at in most of them, you know, either by a jealous husband or so on and so forth. You know,
we all, it's a clean show, Rick.
Jody at some point, I think. So, you know, I was lucky enough in the sandbox. And I still have a lot of brothers in the sandbox right now. And we all pray for them daily. The other thing is that I was lucky enough to do some training with the French Foreign Legion while I was there.
Now, people have this wide imagination of what the French Foreign Legion is. Now, look, you're a U.S. spec operator for 20 years. I think in general, people know and respect and kind of have a grasp.
They have a very good idea of what that is.
Talk about French Foreign Legion, what it is, how it started, who gets in, what's the requirements, what you did, why you like it, so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, there's the biggest thing about it's the same way with spec ops. Okay. It's the mystery. Okay. The thing is that there's not a lot that's known, because once you go through assessment selection and there's a lot of my brother operators out there that'll tell you the same thing. We don't talk much about what goes on because we don't want you to know, because that's us. That's what we do.
Well, okay. Why give the secrets away? You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, so, you know, the Mason started that.
That's why Trump doesn't give away his game plan. That's why he wins these negotiations.
That's right. He's the master operator. That's what he
is. Read his book.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the art of the negotiation, you know, that kind of thing. But the thing is that with the French Foreign Legion, okay, it started in 1831, way back when the King of France decided that it was better to let foreigners join the ranks in the French army, to allow their blood to be spilled all over the world on their behalf instead of losing French.
I got one question on that, one comment. Okay. Why do you think that's better? You would think that a person loyal to the crown would do it for honor and love as compared to sending it out to a merc.
Well, you know what? Who's more loyal than the man that's paying? Think about it.
I don't know. Who's going to pay you more?
Well, you're exactly
there you
right.
Go. There you go.
Okay. So, but the thing is, he offered... At the time, he would give you a new identity, 5 years of service.
See, that's a big thing. I've heard this, and correct me if I'm wrong, you could have the worst record. You serve for me, and you're clean here. You could stay.
Yeah, you walk out the other side. Yeah. You know, once you walk through the doors and they accept you, no longer have the name that you started with. I have dual citizenship.
That's a big thing, yeah.
Okay, so if the shit did hit the fan, pardon my Texican, I know.
Can't say. Okay.
So, you know, we're not on the BBC. I get that.
All right, let's move on.
So the thing is that when it does hit the fan and you decide that, oh, well, I gotta get out of this. I got to go somewhere. Walk into the recruiting state. They're going to take you. Your name now is Jacques de Molay. So for all of our history buffs who don't know who that is, you need to Google it. Okay. But the thing is that you walk out the other side, your life starts all over. Everything. And the thing is that the French government will end up any other government. They will not let you be taken or extradited back anywhere. Doesn't matter what you did, because you are now a friend. So I don't care. They don't care if you went and you stole $1 million. Doesn't matter. They're not going to let them take because you served under the French flag.
Now, how many of those troops are there?
At any given time, between 7,800 and about 8,000.
Why is it so small in its number?
Because the selection and the course is so rigorous. Okay? It's a 4-month boot camp. And you will get buried alive. There are things that will break down mentally. So at the time when, by the time you walk out the other side, you know, the legion above everything, have that kind of dedication. Doesn't matter that, oh, well, you're Indian, you're American, and I'm from Bill. It doesn't matter. Well, we're all brothers in the Legion.
If they break you in these drills, what is shown as success for you to become as a member?
You can't be rebuilt. Same thing they do U.S. military. We're going to break you down. We're going to get you past all those things. That's why when no is not in your vocabulary when you walk out, whether it's in the U.S. Army, it's a matter. Got to get you out of that mentality that no. If I get you to that point, no, and I can't, all those negative things I look at and say, oh, well, such and such said I couldn't do it. Well, why? Why are you giving them that ability to do that? You walk out knowing that you can do anything. That's the thing that people, when you're going through this course, okay, it's designed physically, it breaking you down to the point that you're right there at the line. And then the psychological things that put you through will take you to the point that you're either going to do it or you're going to fail. If you're going to fail, you're not going to be a legionnaire. That's the difference. It's the same mentality that you have when you go through, through the three phases for same thing, because get that mentality. And Ross will tell you, that's why I drive an F-450. I need something big enough to haul around my Eagle, okay? Because no, and I can't, and I refuse to accept that, okay? I can't, or no, not in my vocabulary. I don't even know what that means. Okay?
It pushes,
you're going to get it done.
Yeah. Do you feel that the Legionnaire training is higher, equal, less, as compared to what you get here in the U.S.?
It is every bit as equal. Every branch has their own version of special. They're all great in their own right. Waterborne operations, yeah, you got the SEALs. They do operate in the desert. Who's better to operate in the desert but Delta Force? Just depends on the application here.
What's the actual application? What's your nickname? FFL, or I mean, French Foreign Legion.
The Legion. Okay. Yeah, it's the Legion.
The Legion.
Legion in Tangier, which means the Foreign Legion.
What is the expertise when it's just got to be done? What do you get done?
Everything.
Okay.
When the thing about the Legion is, and it's just like they're just like the military here. The four branches have their own. The Legion has waterborne operations. The guys that do that, parachutists, airborne infantry things, you know, for insertions and that kind of thing. We've got aviation guys that's out. Those things, I mean, everybody has their own job. Think of it as we're combining Rangers, we're combining the SEALs, we're putting them all in the same box. We're going to train them all to where they can do any of the above things. That's what Legionnaires do. The benefit of being in the Legion is that these guys, it doesn't matter if they've come from the Cambodian army or the Venezuelan army. It doesn't matter. They have previous military experience. They bring that with them.
Go ahead. Don't let me interrupt.
Well, no. So the benefits of that are you're getting cross-trained with other people from other cultures, okay, not just from other military backgrounds. You're getting this is their culture. You understand it better than would just if you're just getting the training.
Before I forget these two questions,
shoot.
Do you still wear the white hats? And secondly, can you, what are the size of teams? How are the team breakdowns? Hat first.
Team, the Kepi is probably one of my most beloved things. I had to earn it just like it. I went as an instructor. But I went through the course just so that I knew that I was capable and I was a man worthy enough to.
Okay. Can you explain it to people? Don't know.
The Kepi Blanc is like when you go to graduation in the army, when you come out of boot camp, got your class A's on, proud that you earned the right to win.
So, what is your basic combat uniform when you're going and doing a mission? Obviously, it's not the garb of what everybody knows as a Legionnaire, but. What would it be? Just standard.
It's standard issue. I mean, it's a helmet. It's body armor. It's
camo.
Yeah, I mean, and depending on where it is, you know, you're wearing green, you're wearing brown. That's pretty much the long and short of it.
So, this is my brother from another mother.
He looks just like
you
me,
two guys. Will get along. It's great.
So I mean, the foundation, the fundamental things like that are the same. Just depends on the area of operation that you're going to choose.
And it's amazing, man. Everybody's got this thing in their head of what a French Foreign Legion era looks like. And that's mine. It's the white hat with the flaps in the back. And it's just cool. And the backpack, the whole works. What about the breakdown of teams? How do you guys break down teams? And is there any mission you could state that the Legionnaires did that is not classified that you could talk about as like, oh, wow, I didn't know that?
The Legion does a lot of work. So Cameroon, Equatorial Guinea, they handle a lot of the police. A lot of the police work is kind of the best way to put that, because they're going in and dealing with.
Is this areas that are? Let me get this straight. I don't want to get mixed up and all over the place
here. I got you.
French Foreign Legion, run by the French.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, going into areas that have interest of the French or run by the French or occupied. What?
If it's beneficial to France, then that's where you're going.
So there's nothing. Yeah. Okay. It's not protection of their property. It's just a matter of I got interest here. I like what they got and I want it. I want to protect
it. You got it. Okay. And this is one of the other things. And for a lot of us history buffs, before the Vietnam War, French Foreign Legion actually got ran out of Vietnam. Now you got to remember, the guys are like every one of us soldiers were perfect. Okay. But these guys, okay, they are the top notch. These are the creme de la creme. Got ran out of Vietnam. Okay,
clarify what you mean by that. What happened?
Oh no, the problem was the strategists for the French decided that, oh no, we're going to put our legionnaires here in this specific spot. You know, they set up, they fortified the area, and the Vietnamese came in and slaughtered them. It was and ran them out of Vietnam. Now, we all know what Vietnam was over. It was all about the rubber and everything else that they had control of, and they still have control of today.
But they disguised it as a domino effect of communism from one country to another.
Yeah, you got that right. Because we all know that our government doesn't lie to us, right?
That's right. They're here to help us.
Yeah, that's right. But you know what? I usually, after you hear them say, "Oh, I'm here to help you," there's usually a red dot.
I got a metal poster down at the shop, and it's got Indians saying, a picture of Indians saying, "Give up your arms or something. We're here to help you."
Yeah, that should be your first warning. Yeah. That's the first warning. So that being said, you know, the Kepi is one of those things and the thing is that when one of the things that they teach you in the French Foreign Legion is that they boost the camaraderie because you need to learn French. So men that are already there and that are already Legionnaires are teaching you the basics of French so that you can understand what's going on. What that does is that boosts the camaraderie so it doesn't matter if you're from Cambodia or Vietnam, but you're teaching me French and I'm English and I don't understand French, but we're going to become fast friends. We're going to be brothers before it's over. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those kind of things. I mean, it's very well set up. It's like going to Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A's got the best chicken, obviously, but I'm not plugging them. But
they better start paying me a sponsorship.
Yeah, I know. I better see some lemonade showing up at that. So we got to have something to put the whiskey in. So that being said, they have the ultimate formula. They have the formula that works, right? Okay. Ray Kroc had the same one for McDonald's, and he had a formula and it worked. Okay, the Legion has that same formula. Am I saying they're the best of the best? Well, you know what? I got operator friends out there from all branches of the military that I still work with.
Okay? Well, it's just like anything else. I mean, if you're an expert with a pistol, you're fantastic. You may not have the capabilities here because you're doing a different thing. So
That's
each branch is expert in their own field.
That's right.
Okay.
So, but... Are they a force to reckon with? Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you this. Time's running out, so I want to ask you this.
Go ahead.
You may have mentioned it already, but I'm jockeying a whole bunch of stuff here. A lot of people think once you're in the Legion, you're always in the Legion. Why don't you go about that aspect of it? Because we talked about it. You said some of that was true, but now it's altered
once,
a little bit.
Once a Legionnaire, always a Legionnaire.
Like a Marine's always a Marine, but back then you're in it.
Yeah, well, up until about the early 80s, you were once you signed on the line, you didn't get out. Now, you decide that get out before your contract is up, okay, you lose a lot of the benefits.
I'm going to interrupt here.
Go.
If once you're in, you can't get out, how is there a contract other than you're in for life? And what does that mean? Does that mean you can get out, but if they need you at a particular moment because of the skill that you have, you're called back in, you have to serve, or you're always in?
No, you get out, you get discharged just like you would in like any other soldier of the French Army. But for that first 5 years that you signed for, the first 3 years signed for.
So that was a misunderstanding.
Yeah, right. But prior to that, okay, like say you're the sole surviving son, okay, and the U.S. military is good about that. You're the sole surviving son. You waive your rights to go, and you join, and you're in there for 3 years.
What was the name of those brothers? Sullivan brothers, I think it was.
Yeah,
they lost in the same ship.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, you have that situation. There's always going to be a situation where that happens. Well, up until the 80s, you couldn't get out. They would not let you. Wouldn't let you leave.
But what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? That's what I'm trying to clarify.
You can't, it's desertion. Okay, and they will kill you.
In other words, you'll be an 85-year-old man wearing a uniform?
No, you're an 85-year-old man that you wouldn't make it that long. Because if you desert from the French Foreign Legion, they will hunt you up until the 80s. They would hunt you down.
Okay, I'm not trying to be awkward here.
No.
If you go in,
right,
and until you die, you're wearing a uniform?
No.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get
no,
at.
No. You're still having, like, after you can stay that long because the French Foreign Legion has they've got a vineyard in the south of France for guys that don't get out. And a lot of people don't know this. It's like the retirement home for Legionnaires. You can stay in until you cannot physically operate anymore.
Okay, so once they feel you've done your duty, your prime.
Yeah, and they will take care of you.
Okay, well,
I mean, you can stay that way, yeah.
Okay. Gosh, man, there's so much more to talk about. I got notes here I'm trying to see so I don't miss something. what am I missing? I got nine. No, I got less than that because I got Master Key coming on. We got about 2 minutes before I got to do a break.
Okay.
So what can you tell me that I haven't asked you?
What can you tell me?
Oh, wait, I think I asked you an operation that you guys done that was classified maybe that I can talk about now. They said, oh, those were you guys who did that?
Well, if you look, and you can Google it, there was an operation actually in 2012 that involved in the same area where... incident in Benghazi. Okay, it's funny because once you look back and you start digging, of course we all know about the incident in Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
problem is that there were more things in play than. Did Hillary do the wrong thing? Absolutely. You never leave anybody behind. I don't care who you are. Problem was
that's that, two shows in itself. That,
right? Yeah, okay. We don't have that kind of time today. No. But we can get into it another time. But the thing is that they knew what they knew because the French had already been chasing these guys prior to that and had been just knocking them off. Kind of like what they're doing with ISIS now. But this particular group, and like I said, I don't want to give a favorable light to any kind of group like that. So I'd rather just let you Google it and figure it out. But if you look up the French Foreign Legion for operations in 2012, it'll pop right up. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. That's your homework. That's your homework for the week, everybody. And I expect homework to be turned in next Saturday.
That's right. We'll all be back here checking your answers.
All right. Okay. Rick. Time flew, man. I got to call it because I got to do some sponsored commercials, and then we're going to have the awesome Master Cindy Key on here. So say what you want to say as a goodbye, and we'll take a break.
Well, you know what? As we like to say, and my closest lawyer friend, the basis of the United States, you know what? We were all mutts. We got thrown out of every country of civilization at the time, and we came and we started our own. So you know what? Here's to high treason. Because I drink my coffee black and my tea in the harbor.
All right, Trey, take a break. When we come back, we'll have awesome Master Cindy Key on.
Hey, Master Cindy Key here. And I'm going to talk about a subject that unfortunately happens more than we would hope it would happen. And that is predators that prey on the elderly. There's different kinds. You know, there's some that will come in and give them a call and say their grandson's in jail, lock them in to send them money to get them out, and they're not in jail. There's those kind of predators. There's also insidious, even more dangerous type of predator, and that is someone who professes to be your friend. You may know them for years and years, but just sitting and waiting, be in a vulnerable moment, and then they come in and they take advantage of your emotions. If your family members aren't close by, then they take advantage of that. They get you to sign things maybe you shouldn't sign without family being there to make sure that you understand it. They come in, they take over your life, and then when something happens, like you get in the hospital, they're going to throw your butt in a nursing home and never look back. Unfortunately, if you don't have someone, you know, family member or somebody that will look out for you that you can truly trust, then you are just in a very bad place. My advice is, and that's for anybody, even if you're not elderly yet, you need to really consider and think about the person that you are going to give your medical and business power of attorneys to, what you're going to sign, you know, before this particular situation happens where you've had an incident and now you're in the hospital and your mental facilities aren't where they need to be, where you can change something when you figure out what's going wrong. I do want to praise the I'm kind of dealing with this situation right now is why I wanted to make other people aware to pay attention to their elderly family members, to their self. If you are elderly yourself, please pay attention and please, please, please consider who you're bringing close to you to take care of you when you need it. Sure, it is really somebody that you can trust. So easy for them to come a large game, and they are friends with you for years. They plan it years ahead. Not something they come up with, this happened. Pay attention, because these are predators. They will prey on you financially, medically. They will try to shut your family out if they can, and then you're isolated, and there's, please, please.
Always have words of wisdom.
Okay, next week.
Next week, okay.
We still have plenty of time.
Yeah, I know. I want to go over a few dates. That's here. Ladies and gentlemen, I gave you some dates earlier on, and Saturday, the 4th of August, will be my next license to carry class. Starts at 2:00. There's room available. $60 for a new person. 40. If you got your license already and you want to refresh it, which I highly recommend. I've had people do that a bunch, and they're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. $40. I don't have to do any special paperwork on you. That's why it's a little bit less. But it's Saturday, 2:00. Give me a call. Give me an email. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, and you'll see the email link there. You can send me an email to confirm how much. I got 30 seconds. So Saturday, August 4th, LTC, 2:00. Give me an email. Until then, until next week, keep your powder dry. Go. Woo-hoo.